It all comes down to this. We are just over a week away from kickoff of the 2025 season, Florida State versus Alabama. Michael, this is a big one. This is what we've been waiting for. And talking season is almost over. Florida State has closed fall camp, and now they are moving on to Alabama prep. The very next show we do, Michael, will be a preview for a game in 2025, man. So what we're going to do today is we're just going to kind of put a bow on talking season, on the off season, with our final preseason show of 2025. So, man, we're just going to come into this one kind of relaxed, have some fun with it. We're going to talk about the schedule. We're going to talk about some overall thoughts on the team. We're going to go through and talk about maybe some hot takes for the season, a little record prediction talk, man. We got it all going on in this episode, but it's just going to be fun, man. We're just going to kind of relax with this one. Not a ton of notes, not a ton of stats, and just have some fun with it. So, man, before we jump into this one, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me.
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me, as always. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe we're almost there. We've almost made it. I'm so excited to be able to talk about an actual team other than Florida State. Not that we don't love our Noles, but talk about who they're going up against. And obviously the big one with Alabama. It's going to be a great week. Let's get into this episode, man.
I know, man. It really does feel like this offseason took forever. Yes. And then now it's almost game time. And, man, I can't wait because, you know, to start with, man, I just want to talk about really just being ready for the fall in general, right? Yeah. Like we spend so much time talking about the X's and O's, the Jimmys and Joes and the opponents and right. and the win-loss records and everything. And you know, we know, man, that in college football, wins and losses are really the only thing that matters, right?
Right.
But right. from a fan's perspective, I'm just ready for the fall to be back, man. Yep. Like yep. that first, technically we got a game this week, right? We got
That's
week
right.
zero stuff. We got week zero stuff coming up this week, but just really, man, the fall, like the weather change, the getting back outside, doing some tailgating, you know, you got all the other games that are on that week one slate is massive there, but man, really, I think for me, from a fan's perspective, more than anything, dude, I'm just ready to bury last season. Like, I'm so tired of hearing about what last year's team did. That season's over and done with, man. Yeah. So, obviously, this season can come out and look bad, but I'm just ready to put last season behind us and move on and actually see this team, let this team go out on the field and prove it what they can do this season. And just, man, that starts in game one. So, like, more than anything, I'm just ready to bury last season.
Yeah, and I get, like, the national media, that's all they got to talk about, right?
Right.
Whenever they even think about Florida State, which, let's be real, ESPN and the ACC, I don't need to get into all that. You know, they treat us like this redheaded stepchild. But that's all they have to talk about. That's all they have to go off of is 2-10 Florida State, 2-10 Florida State. Can they bounce back? Mike Norvell's on the hot seat, all that kind of stuff. Florida State fans, most of us, and I'm going to say most of us because there's some of that probably crazy contingent of Florida State fans.
Yeah.
But most of us, we're ready to just like experience what 2025 brings, right? 2025. What does that bring? You know, what type of team do we have? What kind of quarterback will Thomas Castellanos be in his final season of college football? You know, what does the offensive line look like? What is this new coaching staff? Does Mike have that killer mentality again? Like that, we just want new. We don't want to deal with I'm so sick of thinking about 2-10.
Right, man. It's like your ex-wife showing up to your wedding, right? Or something like that. Like, it's just like, go away. I am done with you. So it's like, you just want to be done with that, man.
You ain't got to go home, but you can't stay here.
Exactly. Exactly. Like like you said, man, it's all they have to talk about. And I get that, but I keep going back to, like, everyone keeps saying what this season can be based on last season, but no one wants to talk about the example of, like, oh, an Arizona State or an Indiana that went from 3-9 to a playoff team last year. That's so, like, I just don't put the expectations for this season based on last year's results. I don't agree with that. And so, like, let last season be what it is, and let's go into this season with kind of, like, fresh eyes and fresh expectations, right? Let this team prove what they can be and what's not. But you got 7 out of your 10 coaches are new. Probably about 80 to 90% of your starters are new. Let this team write their own story and don't base it off of last year.
Well, like, what's so different? Now, if this was pre-transfer portal era, then yeah, I think you have to talk about last season because you're in a system where you're in a type of college football system structure.
It's
where
the same tools in the shed.
It's the same tools in the shed, and you only added about 25 to 32 new players. They're all freshmen. They can't even play yet right now, at least. But this is a transfer portal era where you basically just can turn over your roster overnight and bring in 30, 40 players who are actually ready to play right now. And so I love you brought this point up early in the offseason or later in the offseason is that every team is different, especially in this transfer portal era, that you just don't you're not just using necessarily the same tools in the shed to a new season. You've got new tools that you can use. So therefore, it's really kind of difficult to judge this year's team or at least the potential of this year's team based on last year's results.
Exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I think you had told me about this before it with the NFL, like with the Rams that year, they won the Super Bowl. Like they built that team to win that year. And if I was not mistaken, weren't they pretty bad? Like the year before
they were touch and go the year before.
And so like, really that's done through free agency. And so now that you basically have free agency, I mean, look, we got four new starters on the offensive line. They're all redshirt seniors that have played a lot of games. And so, like you said, it's not like you're just rolling with the same freshmen, the same tools in the same shed, man. So I'm just really excited to kind of approach this season for what it is. You know, we never saw 24 coming based off of 23's results. Probably didn't see 22's results coming based on 21's results.
Absolutely.
So just ready to see this one, this season play out in its own right, man. But, you know, on top of that, Michael, we're going to talk about all the components of the season coming up, the schedule and the team and all that stuff. But I think on top of that, man, this is just one of, like I said about fall, man, this is just my favorite time of year. Like I look forward to this all year round. I can't wait to be back in Doak. Yeah. That's one of, you know, man, it's just like how some of your best memories, some of my best memories are related to Florida State. That 2013 season, that 2023 season when I got to sit by Jordan's family, you know, and just all the things. Some of the years where it wasn't like a title run team, like you can have individual fun moments. Like, you know, if you go 10 and, you know, look at 2022, you went 10-3, you didn't really win anything significant. Mm-hmm. Beating Miami 42-3 was pretty daggone fun.
That was pretty big.
That was pretty fun for 1 week. It's just 2-10 just sucked the fun out of everything last year. So, man, I'm excited for that. You know, we got a lot of things coming up this season to look forward to. Obviously, we're going to be doing some post-game shows. We're going to be connecting with people. We're going to do a tailgate for the Virginia game that I'm going to on the road. I actually just secured a parking pass in the stadium parking lot for that game. So hopefully, if any of you guys are listening, you're going to be at the Virginia game. Stay tuned for further details. We'll have that up, man. And, you know, that's the thing, man, is I'm looking forward to just really meeting up with some listeners this year, some of the friends of the show that we have, because, you know, we've talked about this before, man. The support of our people mean everything. Like,
absolutely.
Some of you guys have heard us talk about it before. Florida State has this crazy policy with a national network connection where you can't be credentialed, and we're an independent site that kind of blocks us out. And, you know, it is what it is, man. We do fine without it. But that means we do this more for the people, right? If it wasn't for our community, we wouldn't do this. And so that's what makes it so fun. And I know at that UVA game, I'm going to be hanging out and going to watch the game with my friend Chuck, who, you know, his dad was a longtime listener to the show, got him into the show. We stayed connected as his dad, you know, rest in peace to Ed there, had a battle with cancer. And we've just connected and stayed in contact. And now we're going to hang out at the UVA game together. One of our members of the channel, Henry, my guy, just celebrated a birthday. He's already said he's going to be at the UVA game, his brother there as well. So, you know, again, man, like Ronnie, I met at the Florida game last year. I'm hoping to catch up with him at some games. Me and you will be at the Miami and the Virginia Tech game together. So, man, it's just like when we talk about the community of the PTS family, man, that is one of my favorite things every year is just getting to meet up and put some face with some names of some of our listeners and stuff like that. So, man, just really excited about the season and everything that comes with it. Because like I said, man, I don't know what Florida State's going to do, but I think they're going to be good enough that you can have fun throughout the season and not anything like last year where it's just there was no fun at all last year.
Yeah. I would agree, man. I think we have to come into the season with a different mindset of just saying, hey, we got to enjoy this, man. You know, we only get so much time on this earth, right? And And we are all prone to letting a 22 guys on a green field control our emotions. I totally get that. I'm just as susceptible to that as well too. But man, this is for fun. This is fun. Like, we get to do this, and like, I love what you talked about, the community that this creates. PTS creates this incredible. I mean, like, I gained a best friend out of this that I would have never thought, you know, in you, Jesse, right? Yeah. I've gotten to meet so many of you of our PTS family. And it's so much fun talking shop, talking Florida State football, making predictions together, laughing, cracking up, and trashing on Miami and Florida.
Yeah.
Like, that is so fun. Like, and I love that. I love that we get to build this together. And so, man, if I had any encouragement, man, let's just get into the season. Let's just have a lot of fun. Let's believe, let's put the hope behind our boys that they can actually, represent Florida State football proudly, and let's see where it goes, and let's just enjoy the season.
Yeah. And you know what, if we suck again, we'll be here to burn the boats with you.
We'll be here to burn it all down with you.
Exactly. I will be the first one to get the pitchfork out. So exactly. Yeah, man, I mean, it's just a lot of fun around football season in general. So I'm ready for that just to be back, right?
Yep.
You know, waking up on Saturday morning, watching game day, even if I probably won't watch it anymore after Corso's final show. But, you know, but anyway, so with that being said, guys, I just want to say throughout the season, you know, make sure that you lock in with us, because we're going to have post-game live shows. We're going to have previews for every game. We're going to have tailgates at least for UVA, Miami, and Virginia Tech coming up this year. So there will be details with all that. Obviously, it's an open invite to everybody. We're going to have a lot of fun things throughout the season. Also, if you want to join and be a tribe member of the channel, you can help do that to help kind of support the efforts of what we're doing here.
Yep.
And it's just for one small fee a month, one small donation, and it all goes back into what we're doing here. So hit that like and subscribe button, hit that notification bell, and lock in with us for the season, because, man, we're going to be having a lot of fun this year, and I can't wait to get into it.
Absolutely. And listen, I will be at every home game this season. I could only make one. Thank goodness it was the one we won last year at Cal. But this year I will be at every single home game, including East Texas A&M and Kent State. Man, PTS family, show up, man. Let us know. Let us know if you're going to be there. I'd love to meet with you, get pictures with you. You know, let's have a community, hang out there and stuff. So Jesse's going to be with us for the Miami game, the Virginia Tech game. Man, we'd love to meet all of you. We want to meet all of you guys, and girls too, as well too. So yeah, let us know. Hook us up.
With that, man, we've reminisced. We've had some fun. We've talked about this upcoming season. Let's just, you know, let's get into it, man. Let's talk some X's and O's, some Jimmy's and Joe's. Let's talk some schedule. Okay. Let's get into what this season is going to kind of our final outlook on the season, right? And I did just want to start with that, man, because, again, there's so much more that goes into football season than just the wins and losses. But that's what we got to talk about. And so we're going to jump into that now. Now, let's start with some updates. Just a couple of things that I want to talk about here before we get into the schedule. Michael, I think the first thing you got to talk about, getting back into Doak for that Alabama game. Oh, Doak looks nice. Now, I understand.
Doak looks legit.
There are going to be some difference of opinions on here, right? I'm with you guys. I don't love the reduction of capacity. I understand all that. I'm with you. It looks amazing. I mean, it looks amazing so far. Some of the things that have come out, that big spear in the lobby looks awesome. I totally need one of those in my front yard.
In my house. I don't know about the frigor. In my house.
Exactly. It's just, man, I feel like, again, I understand the old school vibes, right? You want to show up. I don't care about having a chair back because I'm not sitting down pretty much the whole game anyway. I get all that, and I want it to be loud. I was at 2011 Oklahoma. I've heard Doak full throat, as loud as it'll go, and I will miss that, but I think it's going to be – I still think it's going to be loud. Let's see what it sounds like. And I really do, man. When I see the stadium, I think it came out better than I expected. I don't think the stuff behind the home bench is as intrusive as I thought. And at least it's behind the home bench where you need most of the noise on the other side anyway. I think I like a lot of the new ribbon or the whatever they call them, ones around
ribbon
the
boards.
Ribbon boards. Man, the underbelly of the stadium looks good. The only question that I have, Michael, is what about the east side? I have not heard anybody talk about the east side yet.
Yeah.
No pictures. I hope that they did some stuff to the east side too. Like, I hope, are we still peeing in the bushes over there on the east side? Like, do we still need a tetanus shot there on the east side? I hope not. I hope they've done some stuff. I guess we won't find out until August 30th. But, man, I'm excited to see Doak because I think it looks really good.
It looks incredible. I'm still thinking about about peeing in the bushes on the east side, man. That was great. I like that, Jesse. I think it looks incredible. I want one of those spears in the middle of my home. I want to wake up in the morning and walk in there and just be like, oh yeah, I'm about to get it today. Look at that spear, right? It looks incredible. Just the design. The new concession stands, the bathrooms look so great. Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna be willing to walk from the east side to the west side just to use the bathroom.
Exactly.
Those are so nice. I even read today that they're going to replace the field, so no more Bermuda turf anymore. It's gonna be that lay and play. So I had to watch a video to understand what it actually looks like, and it looks like it's gonna be really cool. Hopefully, they bring back the colored end zones.
That's what they say. There's rumors they are gonna paint them.
That's what I heard. So
it looked terrible without it.
But yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see if if we'll still need a vaccination to go on the east side stuff, but hopefully not. And hopefully. We won't be peeing in the bushes, but we'll be peeing in stalls on the east side.
I know. That was so good. I know. So with that, man, I'm just ready to be back, and I hope it's nice on the east side, too. I hope they did a little something. Threw some breadcrumbs to the peasants over here on the east side. I just hope the Wi-Fi works, really. That's all I really want.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some, again, we talked about this. Fall camp is officially in the books. They started Alabama prep this week. Just a couple of quick notes on there and just some programming notes here. We are going to go through the schedule. We're going to talk about some stuff, but we have the Bama preview coming out later this week. Hopefully we'll have it out by no later than Sunday for you guys a week ahead of time there. So I want to save some of the sauce for that Alabama game, but just some of the notes that I want to talk about here. With fall camp closing up and Bama prep beginning, is obviously you guys have probably heard, it's a little bit old news now, starting running back Jam Miller for Alabama is out. And that's a pretty interesting update, Michael. So we'll talk about that a little bit when we get to the Alabama part here. But, the injury bug has kind of come around to us too. We do have Squirrel White has been on a cart, but from what I heard, he's got off of it, and they do believe he's going to be ready to go for Alabama. That's a little concerning, man, because he's a guy that's battled injuries throughout his whole career, and now you're already kind of back in that same boat here. So hopefully, man, I think really, when you look at fall camp, there's a lot of things you want to accomplish. But the number one thing you want to accomplish is getting to game one as healthy as possible. And so there are some things that, have maybe been concerning on the injury front. But at the same time, there's been some positive news, too. Jacob Rizzi is an offensive lineman, your highest graded returning offensive lineman from last year. He comes back. They say he looks like he's put on some good weight since last year. He's carrying it well, and he's moving well for that weight. He's actually vying for some starting reps. So to me, if you have you want your sixth man, but if you can have like a five and a half guy, a guy who's like really ready to come off the bench at sounds like just about any position, man, that's really good for your depth. Some good and some bad news on the injury front. And obviously, when you talk about Alabama, you don't ever want to see anybody get injured. So you want to see him make a quick recovery. But it does change things for Florida State, right? And again, we'll talk about that in the Alabama section. But that's some news on the injury front. Give me some thoughts on that, and then we'll kind of finish up these fall camp preview notes here.
Yeah, I mean, with Squirrel White, this is the reason why, gosh, you wish – either East Texas A&M or Kent State was that week zero game for you so that you could, maybe just give him one more week before Bama to really be rest up and ready to go. But you hope that, again, as they said, that they project that he'll be ready for Bama. So you hope that's the case. But you did get other good news. Jason Jenkins is projected to be back there. Obviously, Jacob Rizzi is back and is, potentially looking at some starter reps there. Hopefully for the rest of these next, 11 days it is, you are able to avoid the injury bug. That way you go into Bama fully healthy, ready to go.
Yeah. I don't think you need Squirrel White to beat East Texas A&M or Kent State or some of that. Mm-mm. You need him to beat Alabama. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy that put up over 100 yards on Alabama as a freshman, I believe it was, or his sophomore year. So you need him. The last thing I really have here on camp, man, because it's been kind of quiet on the home front here the last couple of days, and I'm sure now that they're into game prep, they're probably really locking things down there. But man, Mike Norvell was rather positive about where they're at in his kind of last update there, the last one that I watched. And a couple of things he talked about is working on finishing. They've really done a lot of finishing practice with good on good, which is nice. Yep. As he said, it's a change from where they've come from. Practice has been more physical, which I like to hear as well. They've really worked on creating a lot of competition throughout camp. And it sounds like there's a few spots that are still a competition, but for the most part, they kind of know where they're at with most of the starting spots. And so I feel like, man, there for a little bit, the first couple of press conferences, I don't know if maybe they were just trying to push the team and motivate the team. Like,
right.
You've even heard that Shaheem started to kind of step up a little bit in the yep. last couple of practices. I don't know if that was just a call out to the players to try and you know, push them a little bit, but it kind of had me worried. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Just some of the motivation of the older guys and the generalized like mentality of the team. But I did kind of like that last press conference where it's kind of like, you know, okay, I feel like we're good going into Bama prep, and now we just got to get it all tied up together for that big game.
Yeah, like I really appreciate the fact that a lot of those players, especially on the defensive side, you know, kind of heard that public challenge by Tony White. And then you start hearing like, yeah, I mean, even Elijah Herring said, I think in the most recent player availability, he talked about how, you know, you don't want to be called soft. You know, that's disrespectful. And so to hear our coach say that, like you saw the mentality just flip, you know, the next day. And now it's about creating the consistency of showing up, you know, ready to go, ready to cause violence every day. And listen, I just love that. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Exactly. I like violence on the field. And so, my hope is that you still see that moving forward. And Mike did sound very not confident. I shouldn't say that. He sounded better. He sounded like he's starting to see more of what this team can be. And it's starting to show itself.
Yeah. And, you know, when you get back to the Elijah Herring comments, I think that's what we talk about where it's like, they're trying to motivate these guys. Mm-hmm, and so it seems to be working. It seems to be getting them. I mean, when your coach calls you out, it is what it is. You got to respond to that. And so excited to hear that as well, man. So let's jump into the schedule. But before we do that, Michael, first, I want to bring a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys got all the gear you need for game day. It's almost time. You guys need to stock up before the season gets here. You can order online at alumnihall.com. If you don't think you're going to make it in time, but you're going to be in Tallahassee next week for that Alabama game, 1415 Timber Lane Road is their store location. You can buy online and pick up in store. They got a lot of great stuff for you guys to choose from there. And make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. That's either online or in store. So again, we appreciate those guys supporting us this season, and we appreciate you guys supporting them. So if that's Alumni Hall, they're in Tallahassee, shop online, save 10% with code SPEAR. So, Michael, the way I want to do this, right, you know, typically when I come into every year, you probably remember I did this last year. This is where I started throwing up all the red flags, like, oh, you might want to watch out for this team or that team. Usually the way my offseason process works, right, is like I like to get a good grasp of where Florida State is. But really, man, the majority of it is kind of looking around you at what everybody else has. So like if I got a good barometer of where we are and then I look at where everybody else is, do I think we can win these games? And so I've spent the last couple of days really kind of digging into some of these teams, looking at where they're at coming into the season. And so what I want to do is I want to go through a quick refresher here on the schedule. We're going to go through game by game. Last time we did this, it took 2 hours. I don't want that to happen this time, so we're going to speed it up a lot. I have some cliff notes on each team. I'm going to share those in a rapid-fire kind of pace here. Michael will give me whatever his thoughts are back on that team, and then we're going to kind of grade each game because, man, let's be honest, Michael, there is so much unpredictable with this team this year. This might be one of the most unpredictable teams in 2025. And so instead of necessarily picking, oh, they're going to win and lose this game before we've ever seen them play, knowing what you know now and knowing what we're going to go through on each team, what's your confidence level that Florida State can win each game? A 10 is, oh, we spanking that butt today.
We spanking.
A one is, we getting that butt spanked today.
We getting spanked.
A 5 is a coin flip game. And then the numbers in between are kind of your confidence in there. So that's kind of how we're going to go through this schedule here. So we're going to try and make it relatively quick. Then we're going to get into some overall team thoughts, some record predictions, and we're going to do some hot takes for the season as well. But Michael, I first want to start, before we jump into the actual teams, I just want to talk about the schedule layout and kind of our overall thoughts on it, man. We've talked about this before in other episodes, so some of this you may have heard. Some of you are new to the channel, so I want to kind of get these thoughts out here as well. You know, man, when I look at the schedule from a broad spectrum, I really, really do still wish you could have had one of those cupcake games before Alabama, whether that be, you know, whether that be an East Texas A&M or Kent State. No, I do think it's an advantage that you're catching Alabama early. The problem is they're catching you early too with more change than they got. And so I really wish you had that as that game ahead of time. But at the same time, Michael, I actually have come around on the way this sets up with having Bama 1, no matter what happens in that game, you basically get a three-week mini camp to fix everything that you found wrong in week one. You get an East Texas A&M game that you should be able to kind of hone some things in, get everybody out, and work on some depth there. Then you get that bye week. Then you have Kent State. So I like that as well, right? I have come around on that. You open ACC play against a beatable team, and six of your first eight games are at home. I think that really does help a team with a lot of change get early season momentum, which is going to be valuable going down the stretch because, Michael, that late stretch is tough, man.
It is very tough.
Knowing you got six of eight at home in the early part of the season, that also means three of your last four games are on the road, which includes trips to Death Valley, Carter-Finley, and the Swamp. That's tough, man. That is tough. So I don't think it's a bad schedule, but overall, I don't think it leaves much room for error. If you want to go like 8-4, 9-3, you got to win the winnables, and you're going to have to maybe pull an upset somewhere. So I actually don't hate the layout of the schedule. I like that you can get that early season momentum and fix some things before you get to ACC play. But, man, the back half of that schedule does you no favors. And so you need to get things rolling and stay healthy throughout the course of the season.
Yeah. So the way I've always looked at the schedule is I try to break it up in you basically are playing three seasons in one season. Okay. And each mini season has a quadrant of four games. Okay. So your first season is Alabama, East Texas A&M, Commerce, Kent State, Virginia. Right. So you got a really tough game, two cupcake games, and kind of a tricky game if you don't show up, right, at Virginia on a Friday night. That's your first season. You want to try to come out of that, in my mind, at worst, 3-1. That's my mind.
At worst, okay?
At worst, 3-1. Yep. Then you have what I would call you should dominate if possible, but understand if there's one loss in here. And what I mean by that is because you're facing number 10 Miami, but you're facing them at Doak, okay? Yep. Then you got Pitt, who's always somewhat of a challenge. You got Stanford at Stanford, 10:30 ACC after dark. You should win that game. Yeah. I think that's Saturday. And then you got Wake Forest, right? At worst, again,
3-1.
You should be coming out of 3-1. So now in two seasons, in this big season, you're at 6-2 at worst.
Yeah. Which would be daggone fine going into Clemson. Like,
okay, thank you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then you have basically Murder's Row is what I'm calling it. And the reason why I'm calling it Murder's Row is because you go to Death Valley, where remember, they've only lost twice there in 10 years, okay? Both times to FSU, by the way. You're going to Death Row. You got Virginia Tech coming to Doak, which, you know, Brent Pye will have a solid team, okay? Then you go to the House of Horrors where dreams die for Florida State fans, which is Carter-Finley Stadium. Then you end the season at the Swamp, right?
Yeah.
So you have basically three seasons in one, and the goal is to be 6-2 going into Murder's Row. And that last season, the goal is to try to be at worst, in my mind, 2-2.
I think so, right? Too. Yeah.
2-2. That puts you at 8-4. That gets you where there's no FSU fan based on what we are, our current paradigm, that would be unhappy about that.
Right. Now, if you come out and beat Alabama by 20,
now
you better do better than that.
Right? Oh, we're going to change our whole outlook then.
Exactly. Exactly. But I know, I think you're right, man. I think coming into that back half, you want to be 6-2. Maybe if you could be 7-1 with an upset there, that would be nice. But again, the layout that you just talked about goes back to there is no room for error. You can't really start losing games that you're not supposed to.
Correct.
And, you know, when we talk about the schedule, man, before we get into the individual teams, the one thing I want to say about the schedule, and this was one of the main reasons why I thought Florida State has a good opportunity to be better coming up this season, right, is there are still hard games on the schedule.
Yep.
But overall, from top to bottom, this schedule is not as hard as it was last year. I said this 100 times last year. That schedule last year was sneaky hard. Now, you were obviously bad, right? But that was a sneaky hard schedule. That was a really bad schedule to suck against, right?
Exactly.
You were going to lose every game. And so when you look at 2024, your combined opponent record was 99-49. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as I always say, teams are allowed to get better or worse from year to year. In 2025, your opponents on this schedule went 68-72 last year. So 99-49 to 68-72. In 24, you had two teams with a losing record and five 10-win teams. In 2025, the teams on your schedule last year, you had six teams with a losing record and only two 10-win teams. So you're basically flipping the amount of 10-win teams with the amount of losing record teams. Now, again, teams are allowed to change, but this, the heart of the schedule, once you get past those top four games, it's not what last year was.
That's right.
You talk about a Kent State, right? That's your Memphis this year. Memphis went 11-2 last year. Kent State went 0-12.
Yep.
So it's an easier, a little bit of an easier slate of teams you're going against as well. And the other thing, man, you have, not counting East Texas A&M and Kent State, because I don't care if they have like Tom Brady as their quarterback, you still win that game. Five of your first eight games are going to be against teams with a new quarterback for that season.
So
there's a, there is a lot of turnover at the quarterback position. Now, obviously, some of these guys are coming in that are experienced players, right? UVA, Miami, we'll talk about that going down the road, down the schedule here. But you got a real opportunity to get to that 6-2 mark, man. When you talk about those games, I think you really do have an opportunity to get there.
Right. No, absolutely. If you look at the schedule, you should be able to, you should be able to navigate through that schedule at a lot better, you should be able to navigate through that schedule at a lot better kind of pacing, because you're not going up against maybe teams that showed up better than what you thought they were. Not that Memphis, not that we thought Memphis would be bad, but no one thought Memphis would be 11-2. No one thought that you'd struggle at home and all those things. So this year, with a different team, and what's so hard about this, Jesse, and we've talked about this, is like it's so hard to really kind of gauge what this team is going to be like this season against these opponents. But your hope is that with the more productive of the transfer portal, that you'll be able to navigate the schedule a lot better, and hopefully at worst, again, be 6-2 when you're going into that last four-game quadrant.
Yeah, and I mean, again, you look back to last year, I don't know what beating teams would have done for, you know, I don't know, because you were just bad. But like, imagine if you did get some, imagine if Georgia Tech doesn't make that field goal and you have some early season momentum. You know, again, man, the first couple games last year, you had Georgia Tech that took Georgia to eight overtimes.
Yeah.
You had a Boston College team, you know, whatever, you maybe shouldn't have lost that game. Then you had an 11-win Memphis team. You beat Cal. You had SMU who made the playoffs and Clemson who made the playoffs. In your first couple of games, this year's schedule is nothing like that. You have an opportunity to really get going. So with that being said, man, let's just jump into the schedule. Let's talk about each game real quick individually and just kind of do a refresher of what's on the docket for Florida State this year. So obviously game one, the massive game, Alabama finished 9-4 last year, first year under Kalen DeBoer coming over from Washington. So some of the notes that I have on them, look, they did lose Jalen Milroe at quarterback. That's no secret. He was not a great passer. I think a lot of Alabama fans are probably happy to see him go. But he was a really, really big part of that offense. He led them in passing. He led them in rushing. He combined for 36 touchdowns, 20 of which were rushing touchdowns. 20 rushing touchdowns is a lot, right?
Yeah,
that is a lot. So, like, you're talking about a guy that now comes in Ty Simpson, who – as a, yes, he's a fourth-year junior, but as a first-year starter, is he going to be able to throw for a lot more touchdowns to make up for losing that rushing ability?
Because
he is a mobile guy, but he's not Jalen Milroe. And
and
Ryan Grubb has already, the new offensive coordinator there, has already talked about, like, yeah, we're going to run him, but he's more valuable upright as a passer.
Yeah.
So now you have to, they're saying they're going to tailor their offense more to a pass-heavy guy who has never played meaningful minutes in his life, in his college career there at Alabama. So that's interesting as well. I mean, he's only played 188 snaps, has a sub 60% completion percentage, and hasn't thrown a touchdown in college yet. So that's, it's big, man, because you're getting them in game one.
Right.
The problem is Bama is top five in returning starters with 14. So they have a lot of experience coming back. They have a loaded wide receiver room. They got Ryan Williams there as well. Again, we're gonna dive into Alabama on the preview coming up. This was the only team on your schedule last year that was top 40 in scoring offense and scoring defense. And I say that because, you know, they say teams make their biggest jump from year one to year two. I think a lot of people go, oh, well, it's not Saban's Bama anymore. And I'm like, yes, that's true. The guy inherited keys to a Ferrari, right? But it was also like, you know, maybe if you were a Formula One driver who just inherited a NASCAR, right? It's still a race car, but it wasn't your race car. And
that's
so
right.
he's now had a year to tailor things. It was only year one, and they were still one spot out of the playoffs. You know, this is still a team that, yes, they lost to Vandy. Yes, they lost, got blown out by Oklahoma. They also blew out LSU, Missouri, and Wisconsin, and beat Georgia. This is still a very dangerous team. But again, man, when I round out this, when you talk about the Alabama team, you got a first-year starter, a first-time starter quarterback. We just talked about how his starting running back is out. So that only puts, I'm sure they have a loaded, you know, replacement. Alabama has a million five stars.
A million
of them. But man, at the end of the day, you're also, because again, like I said, man, you're talking about a team who's top five in returning starters and top two in blue chip ratio. They're loaded. But them not having Jam Miller puts a lot more pressure on that young quarterback, right? And this is also a team that was 2-4 outside of Bryant Denny last year. They lost four games and easily could have lost a fifth. Now, Ryan Grubb, I think, is going to be one of your X factors there coming in as the offensive coordinator. But it's almost like, man, this team is loaded and they have all the potential in the world. But when you kind of look at the 2-4 outside of Bryant Denny, the new starting quarterback, the missing of Jam Miller for that game one, every game they lost last year, they got held under 100 yards of rushing. South Carolina held them to 104 yards and almost beat them too. Tony White's defense is built to stop the run. Are they going to let that new quarterback, if they want to throw the ball more, are you going to let him air it out more in game one? I heard he was like 12 of 15 in practice the other day, but it was mostly all short stuff. He doesn't have a great deep ball. We'll talk about more of that again. But, man, this Bama team has a lot of potential, but there's a lot of things that say I wouldn't be surprised for FSU to pull the upset here.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, Bama's breaking in a new quarterback. They got Ryan Grubb back. Is he going to be able to capture that magic? You know, they don't have Michael Penix back there again, you know, to capture the magic that they had at Washington. You know, obviously they got all the talent around them. They got Ryan Williams. They got a defense that brings back, you know, the total team, 14 starters. They got all the stuff, all of it. Yes, we know. Bama. I don't know, man. I'm starting to believe that Florida State might do something special against in that game. It's not because of stats. It's not because of anything. Because remember, this Florida State team is brand new. It's a bunch of it's a collection of production across the country. Right. This is not based on anything, but just, you know, Bama's early, Florida State's early. So let's see what best early wins.
Right, exactly. And you got a young quarterback making his first start on the road without a senior running back next to him. Mm-hmm. And they may also have a starting guard out, too, who's been working through a concussion protocol. Yeah, so, again, make sure you check back for the Alabama preview where we'll dive into that. But, man, I just feel like, again, I'm not confident Florida State's going to win that first game, but I wouldn't be surprised by an upset. So we'll go ahead and drop our confidence level in this game. Remember, 1 is we're getting spanked. 10 is we're spanking. 5 is a coin flip. Michael, I have us at a 4.
Okay. I'm going to go with a 6.
Okay. That's a big okay. Yeah. That's more than a coin flip.
It's right above a coin flip. It's like it's like coin flip, but the coin will lean maybe towards Florida State. Like, I don't know, something about this game. And I remember having this feeling before. And it was in 22 when we were going up to Miami. And I think we were close to being an underdog in that game, if I remember correctly. And I just had this feeling before the game. I was like, man, something about this game makes me feel real confident. And then they went up and, you know, did what they did.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're going to do that to Bama. I'm just saying, like, man, FSU has been pooped on for how long now? This feels a 6 to me. So,
all right. Hey, I love it, man. I just got this weird feeling that, like, we're either going to win or we're going to get beat down or something like that. Again, man, I just, you know, it's just the little things, right? Like, I know we got to move on and we'll talk about this in the Bama preview, but like when you see the running back get hurt, no, you don't want to see anybody get hurt.
Right.
That's clearly an advantage for Florida State. And you know what? Yep. Prayers up for recovery. Prayers up. I want to win too. So,
exactly.
I hope you return right after the Florida State game. And so, like, you know, it's the little things that if they go your way, you could see it happening. So we'll see, man. I hope it's a 6. I'm still at a 4, but I got an eerie feeling about this one, like you said. Now, game 2, East Texas A&M. Look, man, there's not a whole lot to say about this. 3-9 FCS team, 1-9 in 2023. The closest thing they played to Florida State last year was San Diego State. They lost 45-14. They open with Florida State, and then they open with SMU, then get Florida State the first 2 weeks. Ouch. They are going to get spanked twice in a row. Even a terrible, and I know people be like, well, nothing's given anymore. Even a awful FSU team still blew out a bad bad FCS team last year. And this should be an easy blowout. So for me, man, I think with this game, you work out some of the kinks you found in game 1.
Yep.
You get some of the backups, some real game experience, and you just get out of there without an injury situation is all you can really hope for. For me, I got a confidence level of 10. I think FSU walks the dog on East Texas A&M. So
10. Then let's move on.
Then you get the bye week. This is where you start, again, cleaning some things up, rest up from those first 2 weeks. Then you roll into Kent State. Kent State, 0-12 last year, literally the worst team in FBS. Not only were they 0-12, they were dead last in scoring offense, dead last in scoring defense. They lost 55-24 to Pitt, 71-0 to Tennessee, and 56-0 to Penn State. Now, two of those were playoff teams. I get that. They are under an interim head coach. They do get their quarterback back from injury and added a Big Ten transfer at running back. They might be better in 2025, but this still should not be close, right? They play Texas Tech in week two. We'll kind of see how that goes. Not a lot to talk about here, man. Again, if you lose either one of these games, you fire everybody immediately. Right. I have a confidence level of 10 in this one. I think it's the same as East Texas A&M. Get some practice, get some young pups some reps, and let's move on. So, let's go to the Virginia game here. 5-7 last year, 3 wins versus Power 4 teams. Friday night game, first road game, first ACC game, first night game. So there's a lot of firsts in this game, and it sets up for a pretty decent atmosphere up there in Charlottesville. UVA should be improved in 2025 after a big investment into the program. We heard about this at ACC Media Days. They had like a big, gigantic booster donation. They've built some new facilities. They've invested a lot into that program through the transfer portal. They hit the portal really hard, and from what we heard from Tony Elliott and some other UVA sources, they are deeper in the trenches than they've been at any point under Tony Elliott. So I do expect this game to be a challenge. I don't think UVA – this is the one thing that we talk about where you learned things from the preseason camp and ACC Media Days. I think Virginia is probably the one team I got my finger on that's like, okay, I think this is going to be a tougher game than I thought coming into the season. They brought in North Texas transfer Chandler Morris at quarterback, who was productive in the air raid offense there at North Texas. But he also couldn't find the field at his other stops in the Power Four. And this is his fourth school. So how effective will he be in a new system at the Power Four level? The biggest knock on UVA is there's not much at the skill positions around him. So it's kind of you're bringing him in and not giving him a whole lot of weapons to work with here. Kind of the opposite of what Alabama is, right? They were 16th in the ACC in scoring offense, 13th in scoring defense, and 15th in talent last year. They've only had 2 winning seasons since 2011. This is a game you should win, Michael. But they do get us at home at night. We're 1-2 in the last 3 in Charlottesville, and we've lost 2 of the last 3 against UVA. The juju's not on your side. Everything else says you should win this game, and we've talked about this before, Michael. This is a cannot-lose game for Florida State. You cannot lose this game. Even if you beat Bama, you cannot afford to lose this game.
No, you're absolutely right. You cannot lose this game. I don't care what you do. You've got to figure out how to win this thing. You have to win this game, but I have been so burned by Friday night games for Florida State that it makes it hard for me to have any other confidence level than a 5 because it's always such a freaky thing that happens. So for me, it's a coin flip game in my confidence, though they should win this game. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I have it at a 7, right? Because I just think I think you have better coaching and I think you have a better roster. So I think you should win. It's more about going up there on that Friday night and kind of shaking some of the juju that you have there. But again, man, the thing is you can't go in, like if say you lose to Alabama, you can't go into Miami at 2-2.
Right.
No. If you come out of that at 2-3, you might be talking about getting fired, right? Depending on how those two games go. So you cannot lose this game. Now let's talk about that Miami game. Look, last year, man, and again, I'm going to give some positive to each team and some negative. These are just the notes that I found that I thought were relevant for each team. 10-3 was a good season for them, right? There's not a whole lot you can say otherwise. They whooped UF. So, like, I mean, they had some bright moments, right? They also lost to Georgia Tech, Syracuse, and Iowa State. They should have lost to Virginia Tech. They should have lost to Cal if it wasn't for the refs, and maybe even Louisville. They might should have lost that game, too. So, man, if it wasn't for some refs help and Cam Ward just being Cam Ward as good as he was, as much as I hate to admit that, you know, they probably were a 7-win team, right? Yep. And even of those 10 wins, Michael, 3 of those were against non-Power 4 schools, which you don't typically play that many. So they kind of had a little bit of an easy schedule there at the beginning. Number one scoring offense last year, 43.9 points per game. I don't think they're going to hit that mark again, right? Cam Ward is gone. You lost a 1,000-yard running back. You lost 84% of your total receiving yards and 81% of your receiving touchdowns. They lost 2 starting offensive line. And what was interesting, when these are the nuggets that I look for, right? They didn't face a single top 35 scoring defense last year. So wow. if you can, not a single one. So like you had a good offense, I'll give them that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you also didn't face a lot of tough tests last year either, yep. right? And so in steps Carson Beck, threw 12 picks last year, and he's coming off of arm surgery. He's not bad, but he's not Cam Ward either, right? I yep. think he's going to be good, but he's not what Cam Ward was. I think he's going to be asked to do some different things as well. When you talk about the defense there, 68th ranked scoring defense last year, gave up 30-plus in six games, fired their DC, brought in Corey Heatherman from Minnesota, third DC in 3 years. Ninth in scoring defense last year at Minnesota for Heatherman there. Faced five offenses. This is the same concern I have with Tony White, right? Playing in the Big Ten. Faced five offenses ranked 100th or below, plus an FCS team. So great defense. Didn't really play a lot of great offenses there. Only four returning starters on Miami's defense. Now, if your defense wasn't good, that's probably not a bad thing. One other thing I think is worth noting, they did lose their kicker, the Borgalis kid, who was really, really good. That's significant if it's a close game. They open with Notre Dame. They have Florida before us. So we will know who, you know, who Miami is coming into this game. And this is kind of weird too, man. They will be coming off a bye week after UF before us. And then they also have another bye week after our game. That's really weird. I didn't know that until I started looking this up. And they don't leave the state of Florida till November 1st. It's a crazy schedule, man. But when I look at Miami, right, in a nutshell here, 10th in blue chip, tied for 10th in blue chip ratio. They still got talent. They should have a really good offensive line, one of the best in the ACC. They should have a good ground game. Beck isn't bad, and he has big game experience. So I expect Miami to still be good, right? But their best team in 20 years beat our worst team in 50 years by 22 points at home. I don't expect them to be as good. I expect us to be much better, and we get them at home. I just think this is a winnable game. I'm not as high on Miami as some other people. Maybe it's because of my internal hate for Miami. I'm just not as high on them with all they have to replace as some other people, and you get them at home. So I'm not saying you're going to win, but if I had to pick an upset in the big four games, this is it.
This would be it. Yeah.
This would be it.
What was your confidence level?
I still have it as a five because I think it's a coin flip because you know they are a little – probably have a little bit better overall roster, right? But I think getting them at home, and I still don't love their coaching –
yeah,
I think that makes it a five. I think the coaching and the home aspect kind of makes it a coin flip.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure, you know, what the addition of Carson Beck would do to their offense, especially, you know, after he lost his girlfriend and you know, moved to Miami, all like that stuff. And
been focused on them boats and booties down there.
Yes, that is true from him. And, you know, what that means for that. But, you know, You can't dismiss, you know, what he did at Georgia, you know, though he had some all world talent around him as well. Obviously, the loss of the 84% of receptions that they lose off of that, the replacement of Sardis that they have to do, you know, Miami's going to be good this year. I don't know. I think currently they're ranked 10th right now. That feels a little high to me, but it's a rivalry game. It's Miami. I don't care. Like even last year or in 23, when we were the far superior team, I was so nervous for that game. Right.
Yeah.
It's always going to be a five for me. Cause you just never know, man. You never know. There have been seasons where we were the better team and we lost to them and they were the better team and we beat them. So you just never know with that.
That's what happens with rival games. I think this is one where, like, in the last 20 years, we've traded a few blowouts, but it's all been, like, one-score games. And so you just never really know with Miami. But, again, man, I just feel like with all that they've lost, and they've done some things in the portal, but I think this is a winnable game for Florida State. I really do. And man, it would be huge for that because, you know, the other thing, before we move on from this one, we were talking about it the other day. I think this will probably be your first night game in Doak because you don't have any night games scheduled before that other than the Virginia game. I think this will probably be your first night game. And depending on how they do against Florida and Notre Dame, and depending on how you do, say you beat Alabama or say you lose by one score and maybe they split that Notre Dame-Florida, looking at the other games on the docket, this could be a game day game. This could be a massive atmosphere in Tallahassee for that one because there's not a lot of other really big games on that day. It's just, you know, if they drop Notre Dame and Florida and you dropped Alabama, that's probably not going to happen. Yeah. But it has the potential to. So moving on from that one, Michael, game number six versus Pitt. Last year, 7-6, 3-5 in the ACC, started 7-0 with five Power 4 wins. Three wins were by a combined 7 points. So they kind of skated by in some of those games. Kind of an uncharacteristic season for Pitt last year. After starting 7-0, Michael, they lost the last six games in a row, including the bowl game to Toledo. I don't even know how that happens. Now they did almost beat Clemson last year, so they're a team that you always got to keep your eye on, right? 30th ranked scoring offense, but 91st in scoring defense. That's not typical for Pat Narduzzi. Now they do play at West Virginia and home versus Louisville prior to our game, so we'll have a good idea of who they are. They do return their starting quarterback, but they lost the backup who played in 9 games and threw for a third of their yards and touchdowns. They lost wide receiver number 1, who led the team in yards by a wide margin. They lost a starting tight end. And you know what's funny, man? Deuce Spain is a projected starter up there.
Isn't that wild?
I did not know that. Running back number 1 for them, their lead back, is back and did put up almost 1,000 yards last year. So this team's got some weapons, right? Their defense projects to be much better this year. Linebackers are a top 5 group in the country by Phil Steele. They are tied for 5th in the most returning starters with 14. So this, to me, Michael, coming off of the Miami game, talking about all the things that we just talked about, I think this is your biggest trap game on the schedule.
Yeah, I really
do. You know, Pitt's always a physical team. They kind of whooped us last time they were in Doak in 2020.
Yeah.
So it's the one team that we don't have a winning record against in the ACC. So, man, I think this is the biggest trap game here. But I also will say this. This will be their first long road game, right? Their first 4 of 5 games are at home, and the one road game they have is UVA. So they got to come down to Florida in that heat. First kind of long road game here. Pitt is, again, man, I think it's a sneaky, hard game. I think this is going to be a close one if you can win here. But I still have the confidence level at 7 because you get them at home.
Yeah, I have this game at a 7 as well, too. I think because you get them at home and because I think you have the better overall talent pool that you're playing with, I think you have a better shot at beating them at home. If this game was on the road in Pitt, I might have this more as a coin flip, but because you get them at home, I think you're I give it a confidence level of 7. I don't think this is your trickiest trap game. That one's coming up.
Okay, fair enough. I definitely think I might know which one you're talking about, but I definitely think Pitt, just coming off the back of that Miami game, is going to be tough because it's a good Pitt team. It's more about the team and who they follow. So, and some of the lesser games will be a little bit faster on because we'll pick up the pace here. Game 7 at Stanford, all the way out west, 3-9 last year. Man, Stanford is just kind of a dumpster fire right now, right? They lost their starting quarterback. They lost 3 of their 4 top wide receivers. They have a decent O-line and a running back room, which will be their strength this year. They lost key starters on the D-line and at linebacker. They returned 4 starters in the secondary, but that was a secondary that was 131st in pass defense last year. They have a temporary coach, which Frank Reich is probably a better coach than the guy he's temporary, Troy Taylor or whatever his name was. But, man, the crazy thing about Stanford and the reason why I kind of side-eye this game, right, all the way across the country, 10:30 p.m. start, they won 3 games last year. Somehow they beat a 10-win Syracuse team and Louisville.
Yep.
This is not a team you can just pencil in a win there, not seeing the teams that they beat last year. But they did get blown out 4 times. They were 106th in scoring offense, 116th in scoring defense. They haven't won more than 4 games in the season in the last 6 years. So you got a long trip and a late start. You got home versus Pitt and a bye week after this for FSU. So you got nothing to focus on the backside of this. I really wish that bye week was before the Stanford game. They play at SMU before you and at Miami after. So you're sandwiched between some road games there. I give this a confidence level of 8. I think you should easily win this game. I think you have better coaching, better roster. You're the better team. It's just, man, that long trip and that late start almost bit Miami last year versus Cal. So you just can't pencil this in as a win, but I think this is a game that you should definitely win. So I give it a confidence level of 8.
And this is my trap game right here.
Yeah.
Because it is ACC after dark. The game is starting 10:30 Florida State body time. Okay.
Right.
Florida State body time. You're going to Stanford, where everybody, including your grandma, thinks you should blow this team out. Right.
Yep.
And I have this confidence at an 8 for sure, but this is a tricky, trappy game because if you don't show up, you might find yourself where Miami found themselves. Right. Like needing some officials help. And let's be real. The ACC officials do not love Florida State.
No,
so
exactly.
You got to put your foot in that throat so fast.
Yeah.
You know, full throat it and get it done so that they can, so you can be out of there.
Yeah, you got to take your tomahawk and chop that ugly old tree mascot straight down in the first corner.
That's right.
And you know the thing too, man, the last thing on Stanford here is with an interim coach, and we heard at ACC Media Days, he is 0% interested in staying.
Exactly.
He's just doing it as basically a favor to Andrew Luck. That means his team, he's got nothing to lose. We were talking about it in Media Days. Dude, I'd go for it on every fourth down. I'd onside kick every single time. So you got a team with nothing to lose there on a long trip and a late start, man. You just got to be careful for that one. But I think that's a very, very winnable game for you. That's why I wish you had the extra week off there before then so you could get out there early and have time to adjust. You got a Saturday game beforehand, so you really don't. So the next one here, Michael, is Wake Forest coming into Doak Campbell Stadium. 4-8 last year. Thank goodness. No more slow mesh. Officially gone. Bring in new head coach Jake Dickert from Washington State. Look, man, I don't know. Like the guy who was there before, Dave Clawson, did really kind of amazing things with the talent that he has there. But I know there's kind of some renewed energy after back-to-back 4-8 seasons with Jake Dickert. But also look at, man, they went 5-7 with Cam Ward at Washington State in 2023. Right. They went 8-5 last year against a Mountain West schedule, basically as you know the last two members of the Pac-12 standing. So they basically played all Mountain West teams just about. They went 8-5, and that was with John Mateer at quarterback, who was like the number one quarterback in the portal this offseason. Now, I will say this. The guy is a quarterback whisperer. Like, he had Cam Ward first. He had John Mateer first. We'll see what happens. They got a new OC. They got a new DC. I looked it up. The new DC was at Michigan State prior to this, did not produce a top 50 defense in four seasons there, so not – like a home run hire there, I don't think.
Yeah.
New quarterbacks for Wake Forest there, mobile guys who were kind of washouts at their other programs. You got a guy who's been at multiple programs, two guys that are in the competition here, but they're both mobile. And again, this guy's done a really good job of getting a lot out of his quarterbacks. But the problem is, Michael, they lost all five offensive linemen. They lost their top four wide receivers. They lost a lot on defense too. But they took a ton of transfers. But at the same time, when you look at those transfers at Wake Forest, they did take a lot of guys from Washington State, his former program. But a lot of these are not – it's Wake Forest, right? You're getting a lot of FCS guys, a lot of D2 guys, a lot of lower-level G5 guys. They were, I think, dead last in talent last year in the ACC. So it's hard to know what they're going to be this year because you just don't know yet. But you're at home. You're coming off a bye. Wake was terrible last year, dead last in talent. You got to win this game, right? You have to win this game. You can't lose it. And I think you do. And my confidence level is 9.
Yes, my confidence level is 9. Wake Forest, sorry, you're no longer the fastest growing program or whatever the phrasing was. Appreciate you. Thanks for playing around. Florida State, taking it home.
Sam Hartman days are over. So the next game, Michael, this is the one I think is the hardest game on your schedule. And that is at Clemson. Yeah. This is the one that I worry about, right? 10-4 last year.
Yeesh.
But two of those losses were against playoff teams, and the other two were against 9-win Louisville and 9-win South Carolina. Now, of course, that Georgia game, they got their absolute brakes beaten off, like 38-3 or something like that. So they got smoked in that game. But what's interesting, man, is they did lose multiple home games last year. Only two, but they lost multiple home games last year for the first time since 2010 when they went 6-7. So the problem is, man, I mean, you kind of see a chink in the armor, right? Okay, well, you lost multiple games at home last year. So it's not to say that Death Valley is some impenetrable force like we imagine it to. But, you know, Michael, still the crazy thing about that, right, is – since that 2010 season when they lost those two games up until last year, they are 94-7 at home. Good.
That's ridiculous.
Golly, miss good garden seed, as my offensive line coach used to say. That's wild, right? And so the reason I don't have a lot of confidence in this game is the only FSU teams to beat Clemson in Death Valley in the last decade was a team that won the title in 2013 and one that probably would have won a title in 2023. They are tied for first in the most returning starters, second in experience rank per Phil Steele. They rank top three in every position group nationally per Phil Steele, except for in position group rankings, except for running back and linebacker, and linebacker's top 10. They're top 10 in every position group except for DB per Athlon, or excuse me, running back. The new DC comes in from Tom Allen from Penn State. Kate Klubnik is back. Wide receiver room and D-line, we've heard, are rumored to be the best it's been since 2018. Here is what I will say is interesting, right? If you're like, God, oh, that sounds terrible. We could have just skipped this game. Let me give you a little bit of breathing room here, right? Blue chip ratio is somehow only 2% different. They are at 55. You were at 53. They did lose four games last year. They did lose two games at home. They also only beat you by 16 points last year.
Yeah.
And, man, you never know, right? I'm not saying Florida State can't win in this game. We'll see what they are against LSU in game one, although that doesn't really count because all Brian Kelly does is lose season openers.
Exactly.
But, man, I hate to say this, but I think in this game, my confidence level, this is the worst one on the schedule. It's a one.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I'm not
going to
be around.
Maybe a two. Right. Maybe we don't get blown out, but I don't think we have a chance of winning this.
Yeah, game. I'm not going to beat around the bush here. Clemson, they until proven otherwise. And last year, you're right. They did lose twice at home. But Florida State, I think, has won once in Death Valley. And I don't know how many years. Right.
Twice since I know of 2000 and at least 11.
Yes. It's a loss. I have my confidence too.
Yeah. I mean, you never know, but
yeah, you never know, but
it just don't work. I think it would take
this
like
is the one that I'm
playing or something.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the one that I'm like, for me, I already count this as a loss. So, you know, I obviously on game day, I'm going to be like, oh, we're going to win. But right now this is a loss to me. That means they're already 11-1 on the season. Like that's how I look at it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I really think when you talk about this versus Bama, I think because you're getting Bama game one with the new pieces and you're playing at Death Valley versus at home. That's why I think this is by far your hardest game on the schedule.
Yep. Absolutely.
So the next one after that is Virginia Tech. Now I do worry a little bit about this Virginia Tech game because it's sandwiched between two road games. And if you were to maybe lose that Clemson game and not in a good way, where's your head at for this game?
Yep.
But I think Virginia Tech is very beatable. 6-7 last year, they had 6 one-score games, which the problem with that, Michael, is that it shows you that they're close in all these games. It's not like they were getting blown out. The problem is they went 0-6 in those 6 one-score games. So they haven't really found ways to win games. We'll see how that goes, right? If you're in a close game, you feel kind of good about your chances there. Brent Pry even said at ACC Media Days, though, he feels better about this team being close to what he wants Virginia Tech to be than any team he's had so far. Now, that could be coach speak, but we'll see how they are. Kyron Drones is back. He's been inconsistent last year when he was hurt, but he's shown flashes of good. The new OC did work with Robert Griffin III, RG3, at Baylor, so he's going to probably know how to get the best out of that Kyron Drones dual threat style quarterback there. From what I can see, man, O-line is the biggest question mark. They lost all 5 starters, brought in a new coach. Now, he did come from West Virginia, and he did bring some transfers from West Virginia, so it's not only one was a starter there, but they're pretty much starting over on the offensive line. They did lose a 1,000-yard running back, Bashaw Tootin, who was really good for them. He's the one that returned the kick against us in 23. They lost a 1,000-yard back. They lost their top 4 wide receivers. They did add Donovan Green from Wake Forest, who's good, but maybe not great. They got a new DC this year. No more Chris Marvin. That name probably sounds familiar to you guys. That was our linebacker coach under Taggart, right. Didn't work out here, didn't work out there. they lost a lot up front, including 2 NFL draft picks. One was an All-American. One was a first-team All-ACC. Linebackers are decent, but not great. The secondary lost 4 starters. But, Michael, here's the thing, right? So we talk about Virginia Tech. I think Virginia Tech is a pretty – they're a good program, and I like Virginia Tech, right? The reason I think you win this game is because you're at home. And the reason for that is Virginia Tech is 5-13 in road games under Brent Pry. And 3 of those wins, only 3 of those wins are against – this is from 2022. So in 3 seasons, basically, 5-13 in road games – 3 of those wins against Power 4 teams, and 2 of the Power 4 teams they beat were 3-9. So they have not really beat any good teams on the road yet. And so if you were to play this in Lane Stadium, I'd probably give this confidence level as a 5, as a coin flip. They are coming off a bye, and we will be playing Clemson the week before. So that is the one thing I think that really works it in their advantage. We'll see what they got in game 1 against South Carolina and Vanderbilt in game 2. If it was in Lane Stadium, I'd probably go with a 5, but because it's at Doak, I'm going to go with a 7 here. And I think you get the win because they just struggle on the road.
Yeah. Well, they struggle on the road. They again, like you always like to say, like teams can't have a permission to get better or worse from season to season. But this has been a trend under Brent Pry. I think they come in the Doak. I think Florida State wins that game. My confidence is at a 7.
Yeah, and this is a make-or-break year for Brent Pry. He's got to win some games. And so let's talk about the next one here, the Snake Pit game at NC State in Carter-Finley on a Friday night. Look, they had a pretty bad year last year. Very uncharacteristic by them. I think Dave Doran is another guy that's on the hot seat this year. From what I've read on some message boards, man, their fans are not thrilled with 9-win Dave there in Raleigh. So 3 wins last year, 6-7 record, 3 wins versus non-Power 4 teams. So really, that was kind of like about a 3-win season, right, for good right. teams. They only beat one team with a winning record, and it was Northern Illinois. They almost lost to an FCS team in game one, got absolutely smoked by Tennessee and Clemson. Right. C.J. Bailey, freshman quarterback, he's now a sophomore, comes back. He does look legit heading into year two. He's a dual-threat guy. That's probably their best player that they got. They get running back, number one back, Hollywood Smothers, who was recruited by FSU. He's pretty good. Not great, but good. They lose their number 2 and 3. Concepcion is gone. They lost 3 starters on the offensive line, but added some transfers there. They got the biggest weakness I've found with NC State is their secondary. They lost all 4 starters, and who they replaced them with wasn't really that great, right?
Yep.
Now, that's not great because we're not a pass-heavy team. But they have an experienced but not special front seven, 79th in rushing defense, 80th in sacks last year. New OC, former quarterback coach, internal promotion there. That usually doesn't always work out great. New DC this year, which, you know, defense was kind of their strength before that. Look, man, here's the problem with NC State. This is kind of a lot like Virginia. You're not necessarily scared of the team itself. You're scared of the set and the setting, right?
Right.
They have won 5 of the last 6 meetings and 3 straight over FSU in Carter-Finley. We haven't won up there since 2016. Now, the interesting thing with NC State, they will be coming off a stretch of at Notre Dame, at Pitt, Georgia Tech, and at Miami. Whew. That could be 3 to 4 losses in a row going into Florida State. So where's their head at? So I think you're a better team with better coaching in a difficult environment, and that leads me a slight edge to Florida State. I'm going with confidence level of 6.
Wow. I'm sorry. Nope. I will not give my emotional energy to this early on in the season. You can't get me. Carter-Finley Stadium is where FSU dreams have gone to die way too many times. Right now, this is a 4 for me.
Mm-mm. Fair enough. I hope there's no fat dude swinging a shirt off the foul pole or whatever.
You what?
I will say I am debating on going to that game because I don't live that far from Raleigh. But I'm gonna wait and see how things look before I put that one.
Yeah.
Because it's more about where it is, man. We just cannot seem Here's to win the thing. Up there.
Every time we've played them, we have the better talent, the yep. better team. But for some reason we go into that gosh forsaken stadium and we come out with an L, and it just there's no Jimmy and Joe's and X's and O's that can explain it. It's pure juju, and I don't even believe in juju, but it's juju about that stadium.
There's no X's and O's or Jimmy's and Joe's. It's just juju and woes.
Exactly.
That's about all we get out of there. I'm still going to give it to a 6, man, because it's just last year, they still rallied the troops and made a bowl game. That season was so much worse than it looked on paper. Yep. So we'll see, man. But, I mean, Dave Doran has responded in the past when his back was against the wall. But we'll see, man. And so then to close out the season here, another road trip over to the Swamp against Florida. 8-5 last year, man. You know, here's the interesting thing about Florida, right? They have all the preseason hype in the world. They're like preseason top 10. You got playoff. I think a couple of guys have even put them in the playoffs already. Their hopes are sky high, riding on DJ Lagway. Man, I get it. I do. I really do. But I'm not – to me, they're like Miami. I'm just not scared of Florida, right? And when I really look at things, okay, so hear me out on this. Last year was their first winning season in 4 years.
Yep.
They only, and it was 8-5. It's not like it was a spectacular season.
Right.
They only beat 3 teams with a winning record last year. Only 3 of their 8 wins were against a team with a winning record. And one of those was a 4-loss G5 team with their starting quarterback out in the bowl game when you talk about Tulane. That's the guy that Duke just paid a ton of money to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to look into that, right? And the funny thing is, man, like I usually get on here with a Florida friend around that time, and he's a good friend of mine. We've tailgated before, and he's very open and honest about that team. And this is something he talked about too. He's like, yeah, but how many really good games did we win? Right. I think he said something crazy about like Billy Napier struggled to win. Like he's only won like back-to-back games, like once or twice against Power 4 opponents since he's been there.
Wow.
And so I started looking at like, man, because even then Kentucky was awful last year. We were awful last year. Mississippi State was awful last year. UCF. So the teams with a losing record that they beat, it's not like they were 5-7. They were garbage, right?
Right.
So really, with the limitations in the bowl game, Ole Miss and LSU were the only good quality wins they had. And they get credit for that because they won those games. But right. I started thinking like, okay, well, what has Billy Napier done against the better competition, right? So in 2024, against teams with a winning record, they were 2-5. In 2023, against teams with a winning record, they were 1-6. And teams with a winning record in 2022, they were 2-6. Napier, as a coach at Florida, is 5-17. And y'all can use this at your next bar meeting, right? When you're talking around with your buddy. Here's a bar stat for you, a water cooler stat. Billy Napier is 5-17 against teams with a winning record at UF, 4-14 against ranked teams. He's 3-8 at home as a favorite. They got blown out three times last year. Texas A&M, they closed the gap late, but they were getting smoked in the fourth quarter. Man, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in that record last year. Now, there are some things I do understand here, right? So they did lose their number two running back, but they get a couple guys back there. They lost their top two receivers who put up 806 and 783 yards. The best receiver they got coming back was only put up 266. That's a big loss. They do get four starters back on the offensive line. They have a good defense in their front seven, some changes in the secondary. It all comes down to Lagway, right?
Yeah. Right.
And I'll give him his grace, right? He was 6-1 as a starter last year, and the only game that they lost with him as a starter was the Georgia game that he didn't finish. But a quarter of his yards and touchdowns came against Samford last year, a bad FCS team. When you look at versus FBS teams, and again, keep in mind, most of the teams he played against, a lot of those were bad, and he was a true freshman, so I'm giving him grace with that. 1,459 yards. When you rule out the FCS team, 58.1% completion percentage, 9 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and 138.47 rating. Man, listen, against FBS opponents last year, Thomas Castellanos had a better completion percentage, a better touchdown to interception ratio, and a better quarterback rating. I know he probably played against weaker defenses, and I'm not saying he's better than Lagway. I'm just saying I think Lagway, for me, he needs to go prove it, right? They are top 10 in most turning, tied for top 10 in most returning starters, top 10 in blue chip ratio. They play Tennessee at home before you. You play NC State on a Friday there. I'm going to give him the edge here because I think if Lagway turns out to be what he should, I think you have a lot of weapons there at Florida, right? And you have to go into the swamp. You know, Tate Rodemakers beat him in the swamp.
That's right.
You had a generational performance by your defense. So I say all that, Michael, to say I'm not as scared of Florida as some people are, I think, but I still give this a confidence level of 4 because you got to go do it in the swamp. And I think they do have some nice pieces on that team.
Listen, everything you said makes me want to give this like an 8 or 9 based on that information. Cause it, you're right. I mean, look at the receipts, right? The proof is in the pudding, as they say. But this is a rivalry game, and every rivalry game, all that kind of goes out the window, really. And you're going into the swamp. That stadium can be what it is. And so I tend to always give rivalry games a coin flip moniker in my mind, just because you just never know. Yeah. So this is a 5 for me.
Yeah, and definitely a lot of that, again, is because it's on the road, right? All right, so, Michael, that's the schedule run-through that I wanted to do. And I know it took a little bit longer than I thought, but I really wanted to kind of give you guys that piece of kind of the roadmap going ahead for Florida State. Like, you know, again, we know where Florida State is. Now we need to know where everybody else is. So with that, Michael, let's talk about some overall thoughts on this team, right? And really when I come back to Florida State from a big picture standpoint, 99% of the reason, and I've said this a lot, 99% of the reason that people give why FSU can't have a good season in 2025 is purely 2024.
Right.
But again, man, a majority of this team and coaching staff had nothing to do with that. You brought in an offensive coordinator who's averaged a top 40 offense the past 4 years, a defense who's averaged a top 30 defense the past 4 years, your top 15 in blue chip ratio, almost 90% of your starters are upperclassmen. You should be favored in 8 games. Which one of those sounds more convincing of why FSU can be better or worse? Because of last year's results, which had nothing to do really with this team, or all the things that I just named? And so, you know, again, I think from a broad view perspective, I don't think this offense is going to be explosive and a top 10 offense. I don't think they're going to be number one in the country for sure, but I think they can be consistently good. I think Tommy Castellanos has a ceiling in what he can be at quarterback, but I also feel like he's a perfect fit for the system. So you're not in a Gus Malzahn offense going to ask him for a lot. I think you want you got to stay healthy, right? I think you got to stay healthy on this offense because a couple different guys here or there could really kind of tank your season. If the offensive line turns out to be what I think it can be, I think you're strong at running back. I think you're strong at receiver. And I think you're good enough everywhere else, man. I think this offense can be good enough if you pair it with a good defense. As far as the defense goes, I feel better about where I was before the season, before fall camp, than I am now. I think you have a lot of good pieces. There's a lot of good competition there. I'm a little bit worried about some young guys rolling in the secondary. But overall, I think this can be a top 40 type defense. I think you have the pieces to do it. You just got to see some guys like a James Williams and a Jason Jenkins step up in starter roles that they've never been before. So that's really kind of my overall thoughts on this team, offense and defense, man. I just, when I look at it, I see more reason to believe they can be good than they can be bad based on just last year's results.
Yeah, I would agree. I absolutely agree with that. I think that if you're just looking at this season and focus on nothing else, you remove all the kind of other stuff from previous seasons, all like that stuff, and just put your blinders on here. You went in the transfer portal and you got productive over potential this year. You went and got productive players. If you're able to stay healthy, you got coaches who know football. They know how to get the most out of their players. They've produced top offenses, top defenses before, right? You have a head coach that's now more focused on the overall program instead of just one aspect of the program. You should see this season and see it as this can be potential. I'm not saying we're going 11-1 or 12-0 and all like that, but definitely at the bare minimum, you could see. I can see. This is why I've been saying all offseason. I can clearly see 8 wins at minimum on this team. And if they can go with that kind of focus, then 8 wins is just really scratching the surface for them, what they could do.
Right. Yeah, I think I see more reasons to pick 8-4 than 4-8, right? If you get them to play hard, like we've heard that, you know, Tony White typically does and all that, if you get them to play hard and you can stay healthy and some of these pieces hit, I can see a good season for Florida State. I really can. And, you know, the last stat that I shared on our defensive preview that I said I was going to share again on this one that I want to share before we talk record here is just keep this in mind, right? This is the one thing that really kind of makes you go, for 2025. So when you talk about the new coordinators that we got, offense and defense here, Tony White, Gus Malzahn, from 2021 to 2024, look, the frank truth of the matter is none of these guys have ever had a good opposite of them, a good unit opposite of them. Tony White's never had a good scoring offense. Gus Malzahn's never had a really great scoring defense. So from 21 to 24, Tony White's scoring offense pairings for his defense has been 91st, 70th, 123rd, and 103rd. Ugh, that's just bad.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, his defenses have had an average rank of 34th, 3 in the top 40, and 2 in the top 20. Two of his 5 seasons as DC, he was paired with an offense that averaged less than 20 points a game. He's never had an even top 50 offense. He's had 3 offenses since he's been a DC ranked 100th or below. Just hot garbage, right? So now you talk about Gus Malzahn. His scoring defense pairings has been there from 21 to 24 while he's at UCF, 49th, 46th, 61st, and 82nd. Meanwhile, he produced 2 top 40 offenses, one at 41st, so basically 3 top 40 offenses there, and his average ranks was 40th. He's never had a top 40 defense while he was at UCF. Why does top 40 matter, right? We talk about this. Well, Michael, only 16 teams in 2024 last season finished with a top 40 scoring offense and a top 40 scoring defense. We just talked about you have a defensive coordinator who more often than not finishes top 40 and an offensive coordinator who more often than not finishes top 40. And they both have more talent to work with at this stop than they did their last stops. Right. Well, of those 16 teams that finished top 40 in scoring offense and defense last year, 10 made the playoffs. 14 of them finished with double digit wins, none less than 9. And they had a combined record of 182-43. I'm not saying you should book your ticket to the playoffs. I'm not saying Florida State's going to win double-digit games. I'm just saying it makes you rethink what's possible if those coordinators don't get any better. They just do what they did the last 3 to 4 years at their previous stops with more talent against a semi-similar schedule when you talk about a talent level there. It just remakes you. It just makes you think what's possible, man. If we can finish top 40 on both sides, Florida State can have a daggone good season.
Yeah, if they could do that, if the offense can gel the way it can, if it can make sure it's putting itself in non-defensive predictable situations. If they can be more explosive than they were last season, they can run the ball. If we can keep the turnovers down, if we can prevent the explosive plays, if we can get off the field on third downs, then yeah, we're looking at a season where I think at the end of the year, I won't say ecstatic in the sense of like we're back in the nation's elite, but man, we see good progress. We see like, oh, this is what Florida State can become again. Like, we see that. And so that's my hope. That's my blinders going into the year. And hopefully, you know, the boys won't disappoint him.
Yeah, that's what I hope, man. And I just think we're going to learn so much in that Bama game. But I do think if things go bad, you can still rebound from that, right? And if things go good, we're off to the races, right? So when we talk about our final record prediction, right, I haven't changed my record prediction from what we've heard through fall camp or anything. I have not. I'm still with the same record prediction. I've maybe raised the ceiling and floor just a little bit. I do feel a little bit more confident about it now. I will say that. I feel a little bit better about where we're at. I think the number one thing for me is you got to stay healthy, right? And we talked about this in another episode where typically when you come into a season, you can see a record variance of about 2 wins, right? I think we could be 10-2, 8-4, something like that. This season's wide open because this team's so impossible to predict. I could see a 5-win variance. I think you got to stay healthy because I really like your depth at some positions, but I think, man, you're 1 or 2 starters away from this season just falling off a cliff. I really do. Like quarterback, defensive tackle, wide receiver, you lose one and you're in trouble. I feel like that's a real thing. And if you hit on a few pieces, you need a few pieces to hit. If you have those, you can do better. So I will say, Michael, that because of the unpredictability, because of the risk of injuries and things like that, and where it can tank you, maybe I have our floor at 5-7. Look, we went 2-10 last year. Anything can happen, right? I think you could go 5-7, and I do think 5-7 gets you fired. I think you're looking for a new head coach if that happens. I have a ceiling. I bumped it a little bit.
Oh,
I have a ceiling of 10-2.
Oh.
I'm more confident in 9-3, but I got a little feeling that I just think catching Bama early and not being as high on Miami and Florida as maybe some other people are. Clemson's really that only game that I feel like, man, you just don't have a chance in.
Yeah.
I could see a ceiling of 10-2. That's the ceiling now. That's everybody stays healthy and everything works out. My most likely prediction, though, is 8-4. That's where I have us at. I think you do pull at least one upset in the Big Four, and I also think you drop a game somewhere that you shouldn't. Maybe an NC State, maybe a Pitt, something like that. And I think that puts you at 8-4. I could even see where you win 2 of the 4 and you drop 2 other games, right? But I have us at 8-4, and I will say that I feel more confident about like a 9-3 than maybe a 6-6, right? So I'm gonna go with 8-4, floor 5-7, ceiling of 10-2, final prediction 8-4.
Okay, I like that. My floor is 4-8. I think that there are 4 wins that are just like, if you lose any of those 4 games, you should be fired regardless. So I think there are 4 wins on here already easily. I think there are 8 games that flow somewhere between you should win, but is a toss-up to a toss-up to, ooh, you're probably going to lose. And so that's where it's like, if you're at 4-8, you're done. You're out. Peace out. We ain't messing around anymore. I think my ceiling, I think I've already said this in the offseason, there is a scenario where they could go 11-1. There is a scenario. I know.
You've been drinking that Kool-Aid, ain't you?
I'm telling you that. I've been all on that juice, man. There is a scenario they could go 11-1. Again, I've said the Clemson game is the one that I'm like for 100% sure you're going to lose. Even that NC State game with that the Carter Finley Stadium. Even then, I'm like, but they could pull it out, you know?
You're a better team and a better staff. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Is Lagway even going to be playing in that Florida game? He's been banged up all year.
I'm telling you, that's what I'm saying, man. Yeah, you're buying in. There is a scenario. They go 11-1. Outside of that, my prediction, however, is still 8-4. I think that's where, if I had to put money on it right now, they'd be 8-4. But man, I'm telling you, that ceiling for me has always been 11-1 because there is a way, and when there's a way, there's a will, and there's a will, there's a hamburger, and there's a hamburger, there's a win. Okay, so that could happen.
All I know is I'm ready to eat some hamburgers and some W's this season. So
that's right. That's right.
But man, no, really, I think it is interesting. And when we say ceiling, everything has to go right for that to happen, right? And your floor, right. Everything has to go wrong. I think anything less than a bowl game gets you fired. But yeah, man, I see it, right? We both see it where if the pieces hit and things, you stay healthy and some of the other teams don't work out maybe like they're supposed to. Not every team's going to be a juggernaut. Not every team's going to get better. Some of these teams might get worse. And so you got a chance to get some early season momentum, and I could see you having a better season than people think. Now, 8-4 is not where you want it to be.
No.
But, man, I think you can have some fun in an 8-4 season, and depending on how 8-4, 9-3 looks, maybe you got a top 15 class, top 10 class, and you kept it close. You were competitive in every game. I think that sets you up good for 2026. Now, not to get into that, but then I think you got to start winning 10-game floors, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's where I see it at, man. So, Michael, I think the last thing we'll do, that's it for the record prediction. That's pretty much it for the show. I think we'll drop a couple hot takes as we go to get out of here, right? My first one, man, I think Kroma and Boggs are going to be freshman All-Americans, or at least freshman All-Conference players. I think you're going to get two of them. Now, we already saw On3 had Boggs listed as a freshman All-American. Man, Kroma's got something to say about that. So I think these two could be freshman All-Americans there. I think you do upset one of the rivals. And I do think Tony White produces a top 30 defense in his first year.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Couple hot takes for me is I believe Kroma will be the starting running back before game 5 of this season.
Okay.
I really believe that. Just everything you're hearing, I think he's going to supplant Roydell and Gavin Salchuk there. So I think that's one. I think, what was your second one?
We upset at least one rival. And that's between Florida and Miami. That doesn't count. Clemson.
I think Tony White will not be the defensive coordinator at Florida State after this season because he's going to get a head coaching job because he's going to produce a top 10 defense.
Okay. Let me throw a trick question in there.
Okay.
Is he the head coach at Florida State next year? Because if he produces a good enough defense,
Mike Norvell's surviving.
I just had to throw that in on you.
You almost had me there. You know, I think he produces a top 10 defense, and some school, a decent school, gives him enough of a reason to come say yes to that. That's what I'm gonna stay with those two. Kroma's the starter by game 5, and Tony White will not be the defensive coordinator at Florida State next season because he's got a head coaching job because he produced a top 10 defense.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I just think it's going to be by 2027 you're looking for a new one. I think he gets 2 years here. But, man, that's going to be it. That is it, Michael. That's preseason 2025 is a wrap. That is the last show. The next one we do will be a game preview for the Alabama game. Again, we're like a week away from being back in Doak, man. I can't wait to be back, man. It's fall. It's football time. It's no more 2-10 that you got. Well, God, I hope not. It's no more, you know, just bury that season. So, man, excited, guys. We're going to be staying busy all season long. So make sure you guys lock in with us with a like and subscribe, a rate and review on the podcast. Make sure that you check out plantthespear.com, our website with written articles, all our podcast episodes, all of our YouTube videos. Consider joining the channel as a membership if you'd like to help support what we're doing here. We got some fun things planned. Guys, we're looking at also maybe doing a live stream next Wednesday night, a pre-Alabama live stream where you guys can just come in, hang out with us, get some questions in. We're just going to be kind of just got some how we feeling last minute, right? We'll already have basically everything done for that Bama game. So make sure you come check that out next Wednesday night at 7:00. We'll post something about it beforehand to let you know that everything's locked up for that guy. So we appreciate it. Michael, next stop, Florida State versus Alabama. Appreciate you guys. Support this offseason. We've seen tremendous growth, and we're looking forward to a wonderful 2025 season. Couldn't do it without you. Thank you for your support. Thanks for watching. And as always, go Noles.
Go Noles.